Les colloques du Collège de France.
Merci à tous d'être encore ici dans cet après-midi et merci surtout à Dominique Charpin et Antoine Jacquet pour leur invitation. Effectivement, je vais pivoter vers l'anglais qui est désormais ma langue de travail, mais si vous avez des questions, pas de problème à répondre en français. So, what I want to talk about today briefly is how studying archives of the Old Babylonian period can help us think of the ways that lexicography can be done in the 21st century. Now, lexicography of Akkadian has, from its very beginning in the 19th century, kind of oscillated between two tendencies. One which is trying to write a dictionary, of an exhaustive dictionary. I'm just quoting Jay Gelb from his C80A1 volume introduction. The more or less exhaustive dictionaries, which would be the C80 and the Ahave today, versus more topical, temporal, and local glossaries. And I just highlighted on this paragraph by Gelb what he saw as these kind of lexicons. And you can see from the coloring that it's actually a mixed bag of very different things. Some of them are, where is the types of text, topics, a mixture of both, material culture, writ large. But of course, a lot of those lexicons are about the stages of the languages. Babylonian, Akkadian, Assyrian could be added to this. And then glossaries of, well, something else, something that is a place, something that is a specific corpus of archives. Clearly, what we can see here is this kind of mixture of topic, core Babylonian and peripheral has seen as forming the various elements of dictionaries. And when we look at dictionaries today, well, if you take an entry in the CAD, I'm not talking about the issue of the fact that these dictionaries are outdated, which Dominique pointed out this morning, but there's also the question of the philosophy, right, of how these dictionaries have been conceived with a lemma here and a series of meanings, and under each of those meanings, split entries that mix these elements that Gelb highlighted, right? Some are temporal, some are more archival. So we have this kind of weird mixture. Would be the same in a more compact way in the Ahave. Now it's important to remember that the CAD was conceptualized in the 1920s under the impulse of Breasted, with the Oxford English Dictionary of the 19th century in mind and the Berlin Egyptian Dictionary of the 19th century in mind. Von Soden's Handwörterbuch is also anchored in Meissner's work, which was itself anchored in Delitzsch. So we are here looking at dictionaries that were really anchored in traditional lexicography, the idea that the dictionary reflects the language in an almost abstract form. In more recent years, what we have seen, and I just briefly go to the enemy and show the Assyrians because it's easier. What we've seen in recent years is a series of lexical attempts that are focused more on, well, is this periodization or is this corpus? The easiest with Assyrian is, of course, the Old Assyrian period, because almost everything comes from one single archive or archival context, which is that of Kültepe Kanesh. So in a sense, Old Assyrian is a corpus-based form of lexicon because of the nature of the evidence itself. But when we move into the work that Derrida has been conducting for Middle Assyrian, it's getting a little blurrier, because his lexicon is not a full lexicon of Middle Assyrian. It's kind of a what Middle Assyrian does that you don't really find in other stuff. So we're having a very different approach here. Because here, what is important is to present almost Middle Assyrian as a deviation to the norm, which is a very problematic understanding, in my opinion, of lexicography. And of course, you have going full spectrum. You have the Neo-Assyrian dictionary of Helsinki, Parpola and his team, which is also an interesting take, because this clearly is corpus-based. It's really the SAA and, you know, a few more. But then it's not really a dictionary of Assyrian at all. It's a dictionary of Assyrian and Babylonian and Aramean and mixed into a written corpus. So one of the things that I've been thinking about as someone who literally lives in the building where the CAD has been built, is how can we rethink these issues of lexicography for Acadian as a whole, working from our more corpus-driven approaches these days? Of course, having started here, one of my inspirations was Jean-Marie Durand's work on Marie Old Babylonian, the Dictionnaire de Babylonien de Paris, which was really a Dictionnaire de Babylonien de Marie, which is a dictionary of Old Babylonian, but primarily has depicted through the Mari materials. And of course, now the work that Nele Zickler and Ilya Akhipov have started working on, which is using that trove of evidence for Old Babylonian archival materials in Archibab to kind of work on an Old Babylonian lexicon that would be broader than the Mari arc evidence, but of course would be heavily influenced by the Mari materials because it represents such a huge part of the of the Old Babylonian material, but of course also would not be Old Babylonian as a whole. It's Old Babylonian as evidenced in archival materials, so not literature, not other things, right? Not inscriptions. So what this suggests to me, and this is the beauty of being able to work digitally nowadays, is that we can kind of mix these approaches through the possibilities of computers. And on a more theoretical level, I think it's helpful to think of what we do when we study Akkadian, and especially when we study the meaning of Akkadian words, in the perspective of corpus linguistics, which has been one of the drivers of lexicography in recent years. And what is really important compared to traditional lexicography, which would be the stand of the field today with the CAD and the AHV, is that corpus linguistics does not use corpora just as a pot of examples for the meanings that are kind of reified in the dictionary, but rather that there's a systematic exploration of the corpus in order for the meaning to show up in relationship with other words. And that's the key of corpus lexicography here. So the correlation and the different contexts are going to be what we need to look at. Obviously, given how big Akkadian is, we can't have a corpus of Akkadian doesn't make any sense. But all these corpuses, and that's what I will try to show in the second part of my talk, can interact and can discuss with each other. And so all the work that is done on Old Babylonian archival text should, in my opinion at least, be kind of brought together with what is done in other kind of corpuses, and that would be something that the CAD 2.0 in a way could be doing. But that's not what I'm trying to do today. But I just wanted to put these basis of the methodology of corpus linguistics for lexicography because it underscores what I'm trying to do. Now, of course, the problem with the corpus, and we've seen that with the examples that I've already mentioned, is that what is a corpus? And the corpus is whatever we make it. That's the role of the linguist, of the lexicographer. And so there is a need to reduce corporas to a manageable level, because if you can't work on it systematically, then you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that can be things like sociolects, terminology, jargon, that's what I'm going to look at today, but also time, region, situation, external, blah. A number of elements that are specific to defining your corpus, but always define what your corpus is. And in the case that we work on, I think we're always going to have a mixture, and we've seen that with these existing attempts, right? If you're doing the lexicon of Old Babylonian Mari, you're doing a time period, you're doing a specific set of archives, archival context, you're doing a specific type of texts. So you're already crossing a number of criteria to delimitate the corpus. So what I want to do today is kind of how I went into lexicography, and I owe this realization to my good friend Ilya the day I defended my PhD, and we had a drink after that, and he said, you know, at the end of the day, what you're doing is just contextualized lexicography, and that got me into that rabbit hole, because initially what I wanted to do was not lexicography, what I wanted to do was a history of technology, because I was interested in irrigation. Now, a little bit background, of course, this is the Kingdom of Mari and the areas where irrigation was practiced in the Kingdom of Mari. An element that is important, oh, I don't know why they didn't come, well, all right. So the kingdom of Mari, for the few here who may not know, is specifically concentrated along the banks of the Habur and Euphrates rivers because the rest is too arid for agriculture, meaning that irrigation is crucial in the area, and also that this is a very different kind of landscapes compared to southern Mesopotamia, which is what most people know in terms of technology and irrigation, comes from Sumer and Akkad, right? So in the south, you have a situation where you have rivers, water that is higher than the fields, and you let it go downstream through canals and gravity. In Mari, it's the other way around. The water is here, and your fields are up there. It doesn't look like much, but it's 3 meters. 3 meters, if you don't have devices, can be pain. So you have to go all the way upstream and bring the water slowly from kilometers away to get the water into the fields where you need it. So what I started with was a research question, which was, is the technology the same if you have such a different context, right? And one of the data sets that I had at my disposal was the technical lexicon of irrigation in Mari, in the Mari text. And that's what I'm going to focus exclusively on from now on. So let's try to mix this approach that I had initially with how do we use this to understand words, the meaning of words, where it's all about context. It's all about the specificity of the corpus. Now, the thing is that context, even in the archival materials that are very explicit, like the Mari letters, can be tricky when you start dealing with jargon, with technical vocabulary, because they know exactly what they're talking about, and we don't. And they never explain to us what they're talking about. And so this is one of the letters that I published in FM16. You end up having sentences, shall I start the work or not? The work of the three eretum is done. I have started to gather the bundles for the repairs of the dike. And I'm kind of cheating here because even dike should be questioned, but this one I decided to put it in English. But when you start looking at this technical vocabulary, you end up having a lot of technical vocabulary that is trying to be explained by each other, which can be very, very problematic. And that dike is located between the apu, the noses, literally. So what do you do with that? Well, if you're doing traditional lexicography, you cut a slice here, the work of the three eretum is done, or other examples for eretum, and you try to make sense of it. So, well, you know that it's something that has to do with canals because of the context so if you look at the CAD for eretum, you will have on the one hand, if it's in a canal, well, it's a dam, it blocks water. So for the CAD, an eretum is something that you put across the channel and that blocks water. If you ask von Soden, it's something, well, it's a canal, so it's kind of a dike. So for von Soden, it's an embankment, it's the side, so something that runs along the channel. So you have two dictionaries, two reference dictionaries, and they will define that technical term as the exact two opposite things, because we don't know. I'm going to, in the interest of time, not go through the entire demonstration. It's Jean-Marie Durand who demonstrated in his earlier work on Mari irrigation that actually it's neither nor. It's a hole in the bank that allows water to go from a bigger canal into a smaller one, branching off of it. So now let's move to the second term in my letter, the apus. Now, the apus, it means the nose. We know exactly what it means. The eretum is not clear, but we know what a nose, well, it's a nose. If it's in a face, that's good. If it's not, what does it mean? Obviously, it's a metaphor. So same thing, CAD thinks of it as a spur of land that is made artificially. And in their quote of the letter where this happens in a different Mari letter that was already published when they had the volume A, they translate that as piers with a question mark. Ahave gives translation. He sees that as kind of a stream breaker. I will see why in a minute. And then Jean-Marie Durand, who was followed by Bertrand Laffont, thought initially that it was kind of a metaphor for the eretum that he just studied, and has changed his mind, and I think he was right. But he said and thought that based on the evidence that he had, that was maybe more like a natural spur of land. So we don't even know, according to Durand, if that's actually technical vocabulary of irrigation. And that one text that I quoted is not going to help that much, right? We know there's a dike between at least two of them. So what can we do? Well, we can just start, and that's where context and corpus is important. We can narrow down the meaning. We can, and I'm jumping a little into my conclusions. If you want to read the whole thing, there are many pages in FM16 about that. But it is clear that it's artificial. It's not natural, as Durand suggested. It might have been made of clay bricks. Well, probably not bricks, but clay and mud. But it's also clearly that it's at least its surface could be covered with stone. It's one of the few things that has stones in the Mari canals. It is clearly part of the irrigation systems. It's not something that has nothing to do with them. And it is not a part of the Aretum, as Durand had once suggested. And that's basically, if I were limiting myself to that corpus, that's as far as I could go. And that's where we want to move from one corpus to studying across corpuses, right? And that's also Old Babylonian, but we're going towards the Sipar area, and that's a mathematical text, so completely different kind of text, completely different kind of genre, and not even the same area, not even the same regional setting. This is a mathematical text that has been puzzling mathematicians since Neugebauer published it, because all the solutions that were proposed had to imply that the scribe had made a mistake, because they were thinking as mathematicians. And as mathematicians, they want to have neat little geometric forms, right? And basically, it's one of these classic mathematical texts. It's a device, that's its width, that's its length, and how do you calculate its volume? And then you have the solution here, and it's the work. Once you have the volume, you split it between two-thirds is earth, mud, and the rest is a bundle, which is why I said it's probably the core probably was reed and mud, but it could also be covered with stone, as we see in Mari. And what tricked people is that sentence, because this is not usual. And the way I understand it is not, it's, so people thought this is a, I have a nice, and we know it's a triangle because they draw a triangle. They were so unclear with that thing that they had to draw it. And so people thought, well, it's a triangular prism. I'm a mathematician. I know my formulas. And that formula doesn't work. And so they thought, well, it's split because there's 3 cubits that is above water and 3 cubits underwater. And then they thought you could, whatever. And so things that if you're thinking as a mathematician, why not? If you're thinking as someone who deals with irrigation systems, it makes no sense at all. Because the whole point of water is that it changes. And also, if you have, whatever. So what I did is, well, one of the things that is clearly on its back, and then in upon me, and not under the water, but facing the water with a very common use of in upon. And so what you have is something that is 3 cubits on the back, but twice as high in the front. It's like a prow of a boat, okay? And so what they do is they kind of artificially transform that, and that's why you have all these weird things where they split the H and things, so they flatten it so that they can calculate it as mathematicians, and they get near enough approximation, right? So the only way I could come with the thing as someone who doesn't do math, with the thing that mathematicians couldn't get while they were trying to solve that problem, is because I didn't think of it as a mathematician, but as someone who deals with irrigation. And so what this tells me is that I have a device that is taller on one hand and goes with a slope, and that is sharp, that is covered with stone. And as someone who works in irrigation, oh, that's a proportional divider. I have a big canal, I have something that is reinforced, and it splits into 2 branches. So that's how you can get to technical meanings, by crossing corpora and thinking of them in terms of their context. How much time do I have, Sophie? Do I still have time or not? Okay. So another one that I want to go through briefly was the bit tree. And the bit tree is great because there's one mention in IRM 612, and there is no other. And it says the bit tree, we know the vocabulary, it means the house of knots. The house of knots is set firmly in place. The wood bundle is piled up, so there's something with small woods. And I'm too busy, I cannot go today to Mari. That's all we have about that device in the Mari archives. So if I have to just stick to my corpus, then I'm kind of stuck. Neither CAD nor Ahave had any way of dealing with that text. And again, jumping also Old Babylonian, but much later in time and also southern in place, but also not even in the corpus of Old Babylonian, but in the Neo-Assyrian corpus of copies of Old Babylonian Tamitu, oracle questions, there's the famous Diming of the Tigris by Abi Yeshua. And there, because it is an oracle question, they want to document every step and ask the gods, because if they don't document every step and the god says you can go because they missed a step, then bad things can happen. So that's where I have a depiction of how a bituri works. It's something that opens 90 degrees, and then by heaping bundles on earth, people dam the river, and then the water should flow. And then, so there's one that already exists. They open the bituri. And then on the other side of the Tigris, they construct a bituri. And we have the exact depiction of how Abi Yeshua's soldiers tried to dam the Tigris in the war against Ilima Ili. And what they did is this. There was an existing bituri, basically tells me it's a gate. It's something that allows water in or not of a primary canal compared to the river here. It's a very straight drawing of the Tigris, I do agree, but I'm not a really great drawer. And what they did is, because they did, what they wanted to do is not just divert water into the landscape. What they wanted to do is dam the flow here. So, oops, sorry. What did it do? Come on. So they blocked the entire, they constructed a new one, and basically they inundated their own countryside in order to try to drag the land for the people downstream. And again, by closing, and I'm going to jump to this now, so like the whole first volume, or a good chunk of the first volume of FM16 is about doing these sort of things for all the terms that you see here. And that has allowed me to identify all the elements of the irrigation system from the river to the fields, including some spillways, and of course also to distinguish between large and small scale. There's actually technical vocabulary for small versus large scale, just pointing to the Namka room here because Michel Tanré is in the room and he has studied that in CIPAR. And we have exactly the same thing, so I was very happy to be able to confirm that, because that would have been problematic if it didn't work. So very quickly again, things that in the dictionary would just mean to irrigate. When you start looking at context, when you start looking at these words in their relationships, you can actually distinguish between general terms. There are general terms that just mean to irrigate. But you have something that really apply to small-scale irrigation, like the room MKR air. I have never seen that working with large-scale irrigation. It's local systems only. And then also, that helped me understand that what they were doing is basin irrigation. So they're flooding basins and then letting the water flow. So just very quick, because time is running, this is the kind of thing that I wanted to advocate here today, is that when we look at the vocabulary of Akkadian, we first need to narrow it down to corporas. And these corporas have to be defined by every single research project. And then we need to bring them all together in period-specific or area-specific. And I hope at some point that we'll be able to bring all of that together into a large renewed dictionary of Akkadian that actually takes the insights of these minute works and makes them accessible to everyone who doesn't have to do that minute work for their own themselves. Thank you.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.